The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hello and welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for September 1st, 2016, the Mom and Dad Have Answers edition. I'm Dan Coyce. I'm the dad of Harper, who is now 9. Happy birthday, Harper. And Lyra, who's 11.
Happy birthday, Harper. I'm Allison Benedict, also an editor at Slate and the mom of Harry, 7. Sam, 5, and Wally, 3. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Allison. It is our very special call-in show this week. We have a ton of amazing and weird and tough questions from you, our beloved listeners. We're going to answer as many of them as we can. Plus, of course, triumphs and fails, recommendations, and in our plus segment, we will harshly judge Slate news writer Ben Mathis-Lilly about a triumph or fail from his brand new parenting life. But first, Allison.
I'll keep this one short at the request of one angry listener. Please like our Facebook page, facebook.com/momanddadarefighting. That's all.
You know how that listener could make that pitch shorter? By liking our Facebook page.
I think he said he refuses to do it because we're making him so mad.
Well, now he will, for sure. Right. All right. Triumphs and fails. I will start. I have a triumph. Thank you. Thank you. It's incredible. My triumph is that I saved Harper's birthday party. So here's the backstory. Harper was really excited about her birthday party, which happened a couple of weeks after her actual birthday because no one is around in the middle of August. So we had it closer to the end of August. The thing she was most excited about was the cake, of course.
Really? Is that an of course?
Oh, I mean, don't kids love cake? Kids love cake.
I guess. Yeah. I know.
I mean, okay, she was excited about other things about it, too. But the thing she fixated on the most, I should say, was the cake.
Okay.
She had a lot of questions about the cake and when we were going to order the cake and what would the cake look like and could she have input on what the cake looked like. So finally, I just took her to Safeway and we ordered the cake. So, by the way, any residents of the Arlington McLean area, the Safeway on Old Dominion, once the go-to place for cakes, is no longer the go-to place for cakes because Harper was like, I want a chocolate cake. And they're like, we don't have chocolate. And then she was like, I want a marble cake. And they're like, no, we don't have marble. She was like, well, what about red velvet? And they were like, no, we don't have that. And these are all the cakes that were listed on the order sheet. And it turned out they only had vanilla cake and vanilla frosting. But she ordered it all the words she wanted on it. And she ordered that she wanted it covered in sprinkles. And she very particularly asked for this like purple edging all around the outside of the cake. That is what she wanted. And she wrote it down on the order form. So we got the cake. It looked just how she wanted it. She was very excited. We took it to the pool last night for her birthday party. And we put the cake on a bench in the shade. And then we sent all the kids off to swim. We drank beer with some friends of ours who were there. And so then during the first adult swim break, they all came back and they ate pizza. And Harper showed off the cake to everyone and told everyone how she ordered it at the Safeway by herself. And she showed everyone the purple edging around the outside. And she said, when are we going to eat it? And we said, well, we'll eat it at the next adult swim in an hour. So they all go off to swim again. Harper comes back like maybe 25 minutes later to check on the cake and says, when are we going to eat the cake? And we say, 6:50, Harper, at the next adult swim. So it's 6:49. I put down my beer and I look over at the cake and see that it is in fact covered with ants.
Wait, did you leave like was it open?
No, it was covered in the Safeway lid. But the ants fucking found it anyway because we live in a swamp. They were all over the lid. They had crawled inside. They were attacking the cake from all four sides and getting stuck in the purple edging that Harper had placed around the cake. And all I could think of when I saw that were the screams of horror that were about to happen 1 minute from then when 10 9-year-olds would get up to the picnic area from the pool and see this cake covered in ants. So I sweep the cake over to a picnic table and I pop the top off and the other parents run over. And at that exact moment, the whistle blows for Adult Swim and all the kids run up the stairs and they're all yelling, cake! There are four adults there and we each take a finger and we slide a finger along one side of the cake, along the purple edging, and collect like a million ants and then fling the ants and the frosting into the woods. And then all the kids get up there and Harper goes, why is the purple all smudged? And I say, well, there was an ant in it. And she's so excited about her cake that she does not question my logic. And now we have this amazing photo of Harper blowing out the candles while I am plucking just one final ant off the side of the cake.
Oh my
but I
God.
Did it. I saved her birthday.
That is a great story.
Thank
Next
you.
Time, you, the lesson is ask the pool if you can put the cake in their
in the fridge. Yes.
Yeah.
That is a great lesson. Yeah. If you are listening to this podcast and you are a parent of one of Harper's friends, I'm very sorry your child did not eat more than like two ants.
Unrelated to the cake, I have a question for you. When you have a pool party at that age, the kids were all around the same age, all around nine.
Yeah.
When did you stop watching your kids like hawks at the swimming pool?
When they were good enough swimmers that we felt like we didn't need to. Like,
well,
so the,
okay, our, fine, but that's not, I mean.
Right, well, so our pool, like many pools, has a swim test.
Yeah.
So there's a swim test that you pass in front of the lifeguard where you have to swim across the pool and then tread water for a certain amount of time, and then you're officially allowed as a kid to swim in the pool by yourself.
Same, so that but was, that doesn't seem, I felt like when Harry passed that test and Sam passed a different test at our family cottage this summer, it didn't seem to me like they were strong enough swimmers. They were strong enough swimmers to have passed the test, but not for me to like go put my feet up.
I mean, I guess I just love my kids less than you do. I don't know. Okay. They seem strong enough to me.
Okay.
And like there are lifeguards. I mean, it's different at a cottage where there's no lifeguards.
Maybe. Right.
At this pool, there are lifeguards everywhere and they are watching and our kids are good swimmers. And at this age, you know, when we sent out the invitation for the pool party, we knew all those kids and we knew that they were all strong enough swimmers that we felt fine with it. And we told parents they could stay if they wanted to. But no one wanted to.
Yeah.
So we had friends there elsewhere, but none of the parents of the kids wanted to stay at this party, which is fine. But we, at this age, and given that we had already seen many of these kids swim or done pool dates with many of these kids, we felt fine about it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I also have a triumph.
Excellent.
It's also sort of, it's similar to yours in that it's like something bad happened, but I think I overcame it in an elegant way.
Great. Mine was definitely elegant.
Yes. Okay, so for a long time, as you probably know and listeners probably know, I've been very pleased with myself and smug about the fact that our kids never listened to so-called kids' music and that they really liked the good music we like.
Very smug.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
However,
my kids listen to The Replacements.
Yeah, I know. But this summer, everything changed. Basically, they went to camp and they learned a ton of swear words. I think Carrie learned about sex, and they were both exposed to like a lot of crappy pop music. And we paid like so much money for all of this. And John hates this. He hates all the songs they brought home. He refuses to play them in the car. But I have actually enjoyed watching them become little pre-tweens and have gotten a lot of pleasure of the non-smug variety, I think, listening to them sing One Direction or 21 Pilots. Is that what 21 Pilots? Is that a popular one in your...
Like my kids are
angsty,
not
angsty, terrible songs.
My kids are more like Beyonce, pure pop, less angsty sort of pop rock.
Okay. And I put the stuff on my phone so we can listen to it in the car when John isn't around. But recently, Harry and Sam spent a full parent-free week with their truly wonderful older cousins at their grandmother's house. Their cousins that are, I think, 13 and 11. And they were exposed to other pop music, Flo Rida and Fetty Wap. And when we were reunited with them last week, I proceeded as I had been doing all summer. I loaded up the new songs that they liked to play in the car. But I, after a few times listening to my like 3 and 5 year old sing Blow My Whistle Baby, Put Your Lips Together, I started to have second thoughts and to feel like kind of a bad parent for letting them listen to whatever they want. Trap Queen. When a lot of it contains, like, seriously explicit content for their age, which most of it I think they don't understand, but, like, it wouldn't be good. I don't think it would be good if they were singing that at school.
Can you blow my whistle, baby, let me know. Girl, I'm gonna show you how to do it, and we start real slow. You just put your lips together.
So, well, it is unlike me, I think. It's unlike me to be strict about such things, and I don't want to go overboard with the censorship because I think my parenting philosophy or my goal is, like, raise regular kids. I have outlawed Fetty Wap in the house and won't put it on the car stereo or on my phone. I explained why. I drew the line. I'm sure the line will change and also that they'll find a way to get around it, which I'm okay with, actually. I'm fine with them finding a way to get around with.
Right, that's
around
a part of being a regular kid.
Yeah. I just think they should know that their mom is exerting some level of oversight and, like, they should know what I think is okay and not okay. And they understood and they were like fine with it. So I felt like the experience was a triumph. I don't know if you think I sound like Tipper Gore.
I was all ready to like really get on you about it, but I think you're basically right. Like drawing a line somewhere is an appropriate thing for a parent to do. And explaining it to them and helping them to understand it is like the right way to go about it. So yes, I view this as a triumph. In general, I view John's angle on this as the big fail in your family.
Agree. Like,
yes. Yeah. Good thing he doesn't
say
listen.
No more.
Let us know, listeners, what you think of our triumphs and fails, especially let me know how amazing I am for saving my daughter's birthday party at our Facebook page, facebook.com/momanddadarefighting.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
All right, last episode, we asked you guys to call in with your questions, and you definitely did. So let's get right to our first caller. First up, we have Christina, who sounds like a lovely person, but is extremely afraid of her nephew.
What are the expectations of parents from their aunts and uncles? So I'm 30 years old, and I have an older sister who's now expecting her second child. Her first one is 2.5 years old. I'm not around babies. All my friends are just starting to have kids, and I'm terrified to babysit my nephew. But I want to be of help as she's now, you know, entering her second trimester for this second boy that she's having. And I don't know what to do. Should I babysit? Should I don't know, pre-cook meals before she has the kid? I guess I'm not really sure what the etiquette is. And I'm a little bit terrified to be left alone with a 2.5-year-old for more than 20 minutes. If you can describe the role of what you expect out of your siblings, that would be really helpful. Thank you very much. Bye.
So, Christine, there's definitely more than one way to help, and your desire to come to your sister's aid and your understanding that she might need a hand, I think, already puts you far ahead of many of your child-free peers, I'm certain. However, the truth is that I can pretty much guarantee that the most helpful thing you can do and the one thing your sister wants you to offer most of all but probably won't ask for is the one thing you dread, which is to babysit your nephew.
Yep.
I don't think that you even need to ask your sister, because if you ask her what she needs, she might shy away from asking for that help, especially if she knows you're terrified of her son. So I think you just need to step up. Now, I do think, since your sister is just entering her second trimester and there's a little time until she's like really immobile and miserable, you can take some baby steps. If you're only comfortable with 20 minutes, do 20 minutes like immediately and let your sister take a short walk or like make a few uninterrupted phone calls, and then up it to 30 and to 40 and keep increasing it until, you know, she can go get a prenatal massage and lunch with her friends. And I think the reason I'm recommending this is not really to help you, because I'm pretty confident that you could like watch your nephew for a full weekend without any serious trauma right now. But I think that if you feel you've overextended yourself the first time and have a really bad time, you might not come back for a second shift. So I actually think it's better for your sister for you to take it slow, but jump in.
I totally agree with this. You know, you asked about expectations, Christina, on the part of new parents. And I think most new parents don't necessarily have expectations, especially from child-free people they know are a little bit uncomfortable around their kids. And anything you do is really great and will be appreciated. But Allison is right. What they wish more than anything is for you to take that 2.5-year-old off their hands. I think starting early, starting now before there's a baby in the mix is a great idea. And starting small is a great idea. I would also just add that the kinds of things you do with this kid can really help make it easier on you. If they have this little boy signed up already for like music classes or you know, taught gymnastics or things like that. Those are the kinds of things that you can volunteer to take this kid to. And the fun is already laid out for him. And you can participate as much as you feel comfortable and then step back a little when you feel the need to. And you're not the primary in charge of making sure this kid is occupied every second of the day. And something like that can really help you sort of build the habit of being with this boy and having fun with him. Taking him to like a children's museum that is suited for little kids his age, with exhibits for small, for sort of toddler-sized children, can be really great because that's like a whole universe that's his size and that he can interact with, and he'll be perfectly happy to just like sit there and like hand you things for an hour, and that's easy and not that intimidating.
Until he throws a massive tantrum in the children's museum.
That's why you should leave after 45 minutes. But in general, like there are things out there that you can do that are not just like you and the kid in your apartment where there's no toys and you don't know what to do. Like there are other options, and seize those other options and make the most of them. But yeah, you got to step up. You got to go for it. Screw up your courage and do stuff with this apparently terrifying 2.5-year-old in your life.
Also, if you do find yourself in your apartment alone, stuck with a 2.5-year-old and you don't know what to do, really, in your heart, you do know what to do. You can turn on the TV for a little bit.
Yep. You just don't have to tell your sister about it. All right. Thank you very much, Christina. Let's move on to our second call. This is Kate, who is facing a dilemma about her two kids and the school or schools that they might go to.
I am the mother of two children, one who is a rising kindergartner. In our school district, they offer a full immersion language program, which is putting children into a situation where they learn all the same things they learn in normal kindergarten, only in a foreign language. My youngest child is adopted and from a country where they speak Mandarin, and one of these programs is a Mandarin immersion program. It's a very popular program. We got waitlisted, and the very last minute, we got an opportunity to put our oldest child into this program. I'm really excited about it. I really want her to do it. I've always wanted to speak a foreign language myself, and I don't. And I think it's something that would be a huge gift to both my kids. My concern is my second child came to us at almost 3 years old and is not great with communication yet. She's still behind on some pre-academics. We're getting her the necessary help. She is in a private preschool program, and we're working with her. And I'm really hoping that she's going to be ready to go into the same program after her sister, but she may not be. The challenge is if she doesn't go into the same program as her sister, the kids could end up at two different schools. I'm just wondering, am I pushing them to do something that I want to do, or is this something I should just kind of take a leap and trust my kids can handle it? Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, Kate, I have a very simple answer to this question. You should seize this opportunity for both your kids. Now, it is not totally clear to us in listening to this question whether your younger child will just automatically be granted admission to this program if your older child does it, or if your concern is that not only that your younger child might not be ready for it, but that they just plain might not get in and they might have to go to different schools because of that. But if you have the opportunity to put either or both of these kids in the school, I think you should definitely take it. The older one, because it's a great opportunity and a program that you really believe in and something that you really want for your kid and that is important to you. The younger one, I think that you should seize that opportunity when she's five, when she's ready for kindergarten. Even if you feel like I'm not 100% sure that she's at the level I want her to be. You know, I feel like, A, it's just so much better to have them at the same school. Like that's just a much better situation for everyone in the family if you can swing it, especially when B, the school is the kind of program that is so great for kids at that age. Your younger child is going to have a chance her entire life, or at least for like the next 8 years, to catch up from being slightly behind in her communication skills and other sort of academic subjects in kindergarten. But she will never again have the chance to be in an immersion program at the exact age when you are most easily able to learn languages. And that's something that is crucial and amazing and something you wish you had and that you should seize for them.
So I kind of disagree. I mean, I definitely think you should enroll your older daughter in this program. I think it is totally okay for your kids, though, to be on different tracks and perhaps at different schools. I do think it's a wonderful thing for your younger daughter to also learn Mandarin if she came from a country where they speak Mandarin. But I don't think she necessarily has to go into this program if she's not ready. I think your job as a parent is to encourage both of your kids in their varied interests and ways of learning, and try not to compare them. So I think at this point, you know, your older daughter has this opportunity. You think it's a wonderful opportunity for her. You should enroll her, and you should make sure not to focus on this program as something, you know, special necessarily, so that when your younger daughter is of age, if you decide she's not ready for it, she doesn't feel lesser than. But I think, you know, if it turns out that she's actually not ready, and you're right, then she does something different and she excels in another way. And if they're at separate schools, yes, that's tough logistically. It would be nice for them in the same place, to be in the same place. But I think what's more important is that they both have the opportunities that are best for their skills and stage in life. But right now, all
like,
you know,
what are
wait,
their skills, but like they're five, you don't know what their skills are. Well, yet. You're making a decision to like help encourage the skills that are important to you.
We don't know, right? We don't have enough information from the scholar to really know. But I think if you as a parent feel like this program is a wonderful thing for my older daughter, she can get a lot out of it. And when my younger daughter is five, maybe it will be. But if she turns five and it's actually you feel like this program is too much for her, this will be overwhelming, whatever, this is not right for her, then that's okay. Then she does something different.
I think you should still try it. Even if you're afraid of it being overwhelming, I think this is clearly important enough to you and a unsalvageable loss if you decide against it. I think
it's
you should
not unsalvageable. She can learn Mandarin in other ways. I don't think
as easily or as well as you can in an immersion program when you're that age. It's just like that ability evaporates so quickly after the kindergarten years.
That's not everything. I totally disagree. You should take the opportunity you have in front of you right now and in a couple of years, figure out what's best for your youngest daughter.
Which is to take this program. All right, let's move on to our next question.
Okay, up next is a caller who is very excited about an upcoming trip to Disney and does not want it ruined.
Hi, my name is Sentley, and I have a son who is about 1.5, and I'm planning to go to Disneyland for my birthday in October. I originally invited my best mommy friend and her husband and her kids because we're so close to the family. But lately we've been hanging out with them and they have a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old. And their 2-year-old is a very challenging child. And every museum we've gone to or every beach day, we spend a lot of time with him having a tantrum and them just kind of like, come on, let's go. Are you ready yet? Like, not really stern with him. So we all just kind of wait around for 20 minutes until he's ready to go. So I kind of don't want to go with them to Disneyland anymore because it costs $100 an adult, and I don't want to spend 20 minutes every 2 hours with their 2-year-old screaming, I don't want to, and I just don't want to waste our time there. Because he's having these huge, long tantrums. So any advice? I don't want to not invite them. Is it okay to just tell them, like, if this happens, we're going to be doing our own thing? Please help. Thank you.
All right, dude. It sounds like you do want to not invite them.
Boy, does it ever.
Yeah. all right. As the parent of the difficult kids in this situation, I think that first of all, you cannot disinvite them. You already invited them. Second of all, the most important thing is actually not your good time. You're going to Disneyland. It's your kid's good time. But third, I do think you can actually handle this in a fairly sensitive way, which is not to say like, hey, friend, just want you to know in advance if your kid throws a tantrum while we're in line for whatever. I'm taking a hike with my family. We're not going to endure that. I think it's better and actually a good idea to do anytime you take a trip with another family to say like, hey, let's all be comfortable doing our own thing when we want to. Like, let's have meals together or whatever. Make like certain, you know, parameters so that you are sometimes together. But I think it's like actually good and fun to split up. And I think you can do that without making them feel bad and without making them feel that it's like the fault of their kids or their family. And I actually think it's a really good idea to do it in advance, because if you do it when you guys are there and things are bad and you just kind of sneak off, I know from experience that that will make them feel horrible because, again, as a parent of sometimes difficult children, you know, I've been on vacations where my friends have clearly tried to escape without saying anything. And I know what's happening and it makes me feel terrible.
Yeah, you're being very nice, Allison, to this caller. So you are taking your one-year-old to Disneyland. They have a one and a two-year-old. So those kids are basically, they have no opinion about what time they're having at Disneyland. So really, you're going there for you. It's your birthday, and you are the one who chose Disneyland, and you are clearly like a Disneyland fanatic. But, however, you have got to be a better friend to your quote-unquote best mommy friend who has a difficult two-year-old and who is trying her best. And all you want to do is you just want to get on the Matterhorn without listening to their kid cry. Like, that's not cool. You got to like help them out a little bit more and be like a little more forgiving. Soon enough, your one-year-old will be a difficult two-year-old.
Just you wait.
Yes. And you'll be in the same position. I think Allison's advice is really good. As someone who never had bad children, I can't really empathize with her. But I do think it's good advice to make the point early that you should do some things together and some things separately. So it's not like a game time decision where you're clearly ditching them. But I also think you have to spend more time with them at Disneyland than you probably want to, because you invited them to go to Disneyland with you, for God's sake. So my official ruling on this matter is that you get to do two rides on your own without waiting in line with them. So you have to choose carefully. It's like a fast pass, but it's a non-crying kid pass. You get to choose your two, make that decision early, do those, and spend the rest of the time with this family and your friend who you love and their kid who you love, even though he cries sometimes.
Hey, Care and Feeding listeners, it's me, Lucy Lopez. What do ASMR, AI chatbots, and diet culture all have in common? They are all topics explored on Embodied, the Ambi Award-winning weekly podcast from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio. Each week, acclaimed reporter Anita Rao holds up her journalistic lens to all kinds of things that are sometimes hard to talk about, like sex, health, and relationships. Embodied dives into what some consider taboo to answer important questions about our bodies and our society. Nothing's off limits. Hear from expert guests, including doctors, historians, and psychologists, as they break down everything from the dynamics of egg donation, how couples combat mental health struggles like schizophrenia and OCD, and the profits and pitfalls of the self-care industry. If you need a place to start, I highly recommend checking out the recent episode where Anita interviewed two couples who continued to choose each other after one partner came out as trans. So go ahead, follow Embodied and get new episodes every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, let's move on to our next call. This is Megan from Covington, Georgia, whose front lawn is covered in granola bar wrappers.
I have two kids, a six-year-old and a two-year-old. We have a house on a corner lot, and our yard is the bus stop for all the kids in the neighborhood. And I am constantly picking up trash that is left from the kids as they eat their breakfast, as they wait for the bus. And I'm just trying to figure out what I need to do to stop this. I know my immediate neighbors, but I do not know all of the kids who wait for the bus stop. I don't know all of their parents, so I can't go directly to the parents. So do I put a sign in my yard that says my yard is not a trash can? Do I put a trash can in my yard to encourage the kids to put trash in the trash can? Or do I try to go out and talk to the kids as they're waiting for the bus and tell them to stop putting trash in my yard? Just thought you guys might be able to help me with that. Thanks so much. Bye.
I agree that this is a very difficult social situation to navigate.
I love this question.
I really love this question. It's not. So it reminds me of how bad my kids often are waiting for the bus, and how one time all the neighborhood kids who wait for the bus knocked over all the bricks that the bus stop family had in a neat circle surrounding one of their decorative trees. And then we had to make all the kids put all the bricks back, and the bus had to wait for them. Okay. So there are two possible solutions that I see right off the bat. One is, it's not totally clear how old these kids are. If they're eating breakfast and they're there maybe without their parents, then maybe this is like a middle school or high school bus stop. And so maybe your six-year-old doesn't use this bus stop. In which case, I think you are well within your rights to go out there, tell those kids it would be really great if you did not leave your trash in my yard, and put a small trash can out there for them to put their trash in. Probably they will mock you and maybe egg your house, but it's worth a try. However, if these are like younger kids, or if your six-year-old is at this bus stop, this seems like the simplest solution is give your six-year-old a job. Send him or her out there with their, you know, while they're waiting for the bus with like a little plastic shopping bag. And she can just go to the kids and say, hey, put your trash in here. And they can put their trash in there. Your child can throw it away on the bus. Problem solved. And you've given your child like a little job to do that I bet they will enjoy. It will be a gentle reminder to these children, these reprobates on your lawn, that they should not just throw their shit on your lawn. They should put it in a bag.
No, do not make your child a social outcast by making her like.
They're six. No 6 year old will be a social outcast. It would be. They would be a social outcast if they were
littering
like
12. Is cool, Dan. Ugh. All right, listen. Littering.
So
is not
says
cool.
The woman who lets her kids listen to Fetty Wap.
I love this question. I just feel really bad all the time for the bus stop house in our neighborhood. And I often wonder, this is new to me because we, like, in the city, we didn't, you know, deal with this. But I don't think they have kids. I don't know them. But in our neighborhood, I don't think they have kids. So it's like, oh, man, like a raw deal.
Just chosen at random. That's
but also, works. Do they know? Do you know that your house is the bus stop when you buy your house? Probably not. No one. I bet people don't tell you that.
Oh, absolutely not.
And then you just, like, one day, all these kids are in the front. Yeah, it's
right.
Just
it's like
a nightmare.
The crack in the foundation you just
nightmare.
Forget to mention.
Yeah. Yeah. I really sympathize with you, Megan. Sam, picking up his brother last year, actually peed on a bush at the bus stop house. I'm going to apologize to you since I don't know the family whose house it is. Megan, I'm sorry about that. I think you should definitely put a trash can out with like a sign on it. I think if it's older kids, that's just going to be really, really rough. If it is younger kids, though, I would try, if you're willing to put this effort into it, I would try, like, at the beginning of the school year to come out in the morning, maybe even, like, with, like, a snack / peace offering. Not that you have any reason to do anything especially nice for these people, but it would be, like, a nice way to start the year. And then say, hey, guys, this is my lawn, and... You know, it would be great if you could throw your stuff into this trash can, because what happens is I end up with trash in my yard every day. And I think being super nice to the kids and the families might help. But I do think, yeah, get a big, huge trash can, because otherwise they're not going to go to the trouble of taking their backpacks off and putting right. the trash in their backpacks. They're just not. I mean, that's gross and bad that they won't. But I think you do have to provide them with a place to put it, or else it's going to end up on your yard.
I think coming out with a peace offering is a very good idea, and is in fact extendable even to older kids. Like, if there are a bunch of high schools there, you should just bring them a beer on the first day of school and be like, when you're done with this beer,
put it in the recycling bin.
Please put it in the recycling bin that I placed in my front yard. And then you'd be the cool bus stop lady.
You could also go, you know, you could pass out flyers. I don't know if you know where everybody's coming from, but you could actually go door to door and just pass out a little note saying, like, please put your trash in the
That's
trash can.
That's too much. That's
okay.
too much.
All right. Okay. Yeah, You're right.
Also,
right.
Anything you pass out will eventually end up crumpled up on your lawn.
Right. I think you should just make them cookies without any kind of actual packaging. Good luck.
Also, if you are Allison's kid's bus stop, you should maybe install a toilet. Somewhere in your yard, like behind the privacy of bushes, so
it's
that everyone
natural.
Can go when they need to.
Okay. Now we have a call from another Megan who has a question about Disney movies.
I have a question about movies, particularly Disney movies, and my 4-year-old daughter. So until now, we've somehow managed to avoid movies. She watches TV, but not any movies so far. And now she's really interested in Frozen because everyone loves it. I'm concerned about the ways in which women are shown in Disney movies particularly, and also the emphasis on, like, romantic love all the time in those movies. But on the other hand, I remember loving the songs and singing along and the music, and I don't want to take this away from her just by being, like, overprotective. But maybe she's still too young. She's only 4. I'm not sure. And so I guess maybe it's mostly a question for you, Dan, about how you dealt with this popular media kind of vision of women with your daughters. I really always love your down-to-earth, both of you, laid-back kind of parenting styles, but very thoughtful at the same time. So I'm really curious to see what you would say about this. Thanks very much.
Megan, I got to tell you, Disney movies are a lot different than they used to be. So if, like, your memory of the ones you enjoyed when you were a kid are, you know, the 80s or 90s ones, Beauty and the Beast or Little Mermaid or whatever, that were like beautiful movies with totally retrograde gender messages, Disney movies are not really like that anymore. no kids' movies are really like that anymore. In fact, like no kids' entertainment of any kind is like that anymore. Even the ones with princesses in them are really not like that at all. So I think that you are more worried than you need to be. So like to take an example, Frozen, which you asked about, it does have a small romance in it. But really, actually, its overall message is that your first boyfriend will turn out to be evil and you should just trust your sister because your sister has your best interests at heart. Brave has no romantic plot at all. And The Princess and the Frog and Tangled, which are two other recent princess movies from Disney, they both have love stories. But in each of them, the woman is a totally equal or even superior partner in the relationship. There's really nothing I find objectionable about those portrayals. And in fact, there's a lot I find empowering and wonderful about those female characters. So I think, Megan, you need to take your fear of Disney movies and let it go, let it go, et cetera.
Ooh. Yeah, I agree. And just to chime in and say that if there are objectionable movies and TV shows, that's also, for these reasons, it's also an issue for boys because boys see, you know, portrayals of girls too, and it definitely sinks in. So it's something, you know, we try to work on in our house when we face it. The Olympics really helped. But I agree with Dan that, you know, a lot of movies these days are pretty good on this front. And I would let your daughter watch them without
fear. Maybe worse for boys. And like the boy characters seem less interesting. Like movies focused on boys often feel like they're not really addressing these issues at all. And they are often pure adventure stories don't really feel like they're giving you much of a role model if that's what you're looking for out of this entertainment. Whereas stories featuring girls are very conscious of that and often do a really good job of it. Anyways, go ahead.
No, I can't remember. Was the protagonist of Zootopia a girl bunny?
She's a girl. Yes, yeah, she's a girl bunny who wants to be a cop. She's a great character.
Yeah.
Megan, I think you should go for it. We are living in a golden age of children's movies and children's entertainment. You should seize the opportunity. It's like really fun to sit with your kid and watch a bunch of really great movies. All right, let's move on to our next call from Martine, who has twins and wants to force the parents of all her kids' friends to make a Solomonic decision.
I have a birthday etiquette question. I have twins who will be turning 6 in October. We are planning a joint party for them at a local bounty-type place. They go to the same school but are in different classes. All of the classes in the same grade share playground time, so all the kids know each other to varying degrees. But obviously there are some kids that are more friendly with my son than my daughter and vice versa. I would like to find a way to request that each guest only bring a gift for the twin that is their friend. I feel guilty asking a parent to buy 2 gifts to come to our party if their kid is only friends with one of the kids, one of my kids. And to be honest, I'd like to cut down on the number of crappy gifts that will wind up in my house. My kids will certainly not miss a few gifts and will have slightly less junk to step over a month after the party. My question is whether it is okay to make this type of gift suggestion. I feel strange bringing up the gift issue at all, since that's generally a no-no in an invitation, but I don't know of any other way to approach this. I'd love to hear your thoughts on my twin dilemma. Thanks so much.
I don't think it's a no-no to bring up gifts in an invitation. Yeah. I mean, when we were little, I don't know, not that I know.
Boom!
No one laughed. Wow.
Well, I mean,
that was very
they're laughing at home right now. You just can't hear.
Yeah, I mean, when our kids were little, we and lots of other people put like no gifts on the invitation, and I think that was fine. I also think I don't think you need to feel guilty about people bringing 2 gifts. You have 2 separate kids, and if they weren't coming to your birthday party, they'd be going to, you know, two other birthday parties. So it's okay just because it's one birthday party. However, I also think it's fine if you think your kids, you know, don't need all of these presents. I think it's okay to stage manage it a little, which what I wouldn't do is leave it up to the guests. I think that's kind of weird to say to them, like, please bring a gift for my kid you like the most or my kid you're the closest with. That's a little weird. I would actually just like you decide, you know, who's in their class or who they hang out with. And this is a little bit of a pain for you, but personalize the invitations and just say, hey, please bring a gift for Ella. Hey, please bring a gift for Ella B. I don't know what your kids' names are.
Ella and Ella B. That's definitely the case.
Yeah.
Why not just tell them not to bring any gifts? Or why not?
That's not what she asked, Dan. But that's a better answer. Don't bring your progressive.
Whatever. We blew it, and I forgot to put that on Harper's invitation, so now she got a bunch of gifts. And they're, and if you're a parent of one of Harper's friends at the birthday party, I'm sorry about how the present you gave Harper is going to be for sale in our yard sale on Monday.
Fine. Setting aside, let's say you believe in no gifts. Okay, great. But Martine did not ask that question. She asked if she can say one gift for, you know, bring a gift for one kid or the other.
Here's a real alternate proposal. You could also suggest that they bring one gift that both kids can share. That, and so the, so it's less about making them make a choice with it, which I agree with you, Allison, you should not do. And then also less about sort of feeling like you're stage managing. You bring a gift for this kid. You bring a gift for this kid. But if you put on all the invitations, please just bring one gift that the twins can share. A, you have less crap around your house. And B, side benefit, I do bet that you get like less like superhero and princess crap if people are striving to buy like non-gendered presents, if people are working, like trying to find something that they think both kids might like.
But just because you're a twin, should you have to share everything with your twin? You wouldn't have to do that with like your non-twin siblings. That seems like asking a lot of your six-year-old kids.
But isn't that, but that's what kids who live in a house have to do all the time anyway. They have to share.
Yeah, so should they have to do it? I know, but should they have to do it in this instance? I don't think so.
I don't know. I'm very sympathetic to the desire to cut down on the number of presents and very sympathetic to make to really feeling bad for telling people that you come to this birthday party, you have to buy two goddamn presents and bring them.
Okay, like, fine. So then a great solution is to have some people bring gifts for one kid and some people bring gifts for the other kid. That's cutting down. That's making each person only bring one gift. I don't think it should be shared.
I think it should be shared. Martine, call us back and tell us what you decide to do. but only if you choose my decision.
Okay. Our final question is from B, who is asking us to dig deep and be honest. Are you ready, Dan?
Yikes.
Okay.
And I have a question for you that will require you to dig deep into yourself and be brutally honest about your life as parents. My husband is in his 50s. I'm in my 30s. We've been together for 5 years and are currently without children. I'd always taken it as a given that I'd be a parent one day, but over the last few years have really come to appreciate the flexibility we have to travel, spend money on ourselves, and be spontaneous with our plans. And so I'm truly torn about whether we should have kids. My husband plans to retire in a couple of years, and I know he'd probably prefer a quiet retirement on a boat somewhere in the Med, but he's still open to the idea of children for my sake. He has two grown kids from a previous marriage, I should have added. I don't want to be in my 50s one day and regret not having a family. I also fear regretting losing my freedom now if we do have kids. So, Allison, Dan, please can you tell me honestly if you feel like you missed out on a peaceful and carefree life when you became parents? And could you perhaps check around to see if anyone you know in their 50s or 60s is perfectly content with the decision they made not to have kids? It will be massively appreciated. Thank you, and I love the show. Bye.
This is a really interesting question, and B, I'm struck by how truly torn you seem. It is a very hard decision. The decision is even more complicated in your case because of your husband's age, because of the fact that he's already had kids and gone through this process, and I appreciate the thoughtfulness with which you are going through this. So let's answer, Allison, her question one first. Question one was, did we miss out on a peaceful and carefree life because we had kids? How do you answer that question?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. That is a thing that you lose when you have kids. I'm happy about the trade-off, but that doesn't mean that I don't miss the peaceful, carefree life. So question two, do you know child-free people who are older, 40s, 50s, or 60s, who feel perfectly content with their decision? I will answer this one first. I know many child-free people who've gone through their whole life choosing or not choosing to not have any children, who didn't have children on purpose or because it just worked out that way, who are very, very happy with their lives. I don't know anyone who's 100% perfectly content with any of their decisions at age 60, but I do know plenty of people who are delighted by the life that they have chosen without kids, or the life that they ended up with without kids, who live it to their fullest, and who sometimes maybe think sadly of the kids that they might have had, but that doesn't mean that you don't love the life that you have and are really, really happy about it. What about you, Allison?
Yeah, I mean, I also know some people in that age range, maybe a little bit younger, who decided not to have kids, or at least I think decided not to have kids. Maybe, like you say, it wasn't a choice, although these couples that I'm thinking of, I think that it was. And yeah, I think that they are happy with their lives. I actually emailed one of the husbands in one couple that I know to ask him to email me his thoughts so that I could incorporate them into my answer here. And he did not respond, either maybe because it's complicated and private, or because he doesn't usually answer my emails.
Or because he's like jetting off on some great vacation that he can afford because he doesn't have kids.
Right. There are many reasons. We cannot answer this question. I mean, we can answer these two questions for you. We can't answer the larger question of what you should do.
Sure, we can.
Nor do you want us to. But
sure, she does.
Yes, I think it's quite possible to be happy and lead a full life without having kids. I also think that, you know, obviously we both made the decision not to do that. We made the decision to give certain things up, the peaceful and quiet life, or it doesn't have to be quiet, I guess. The peaceful and carefree life is I think how Martine put it, to have something else. And I think that I would, in my 50s and 60s, probably regret not having kids, but maybe maybe I wouldn't know what I was missing, or maybe I'm fooling myself based on the choices I've made. But if I'm being totally honest, I feel like even the people that I know who have wonderful and full lives are missing out on something. And I know you're probably, you know, people are hate hearing that. And we have lots of listeners who don't have kids and have wonderful lives and hear this all the time and don't want to hear it again from me. But you asked for honesty. So that's my honest answer.
I don't know. I feel like everyone is missing out on something. Like you, by having kids, are missing out on a million amazing trips you could have taken, or experiences you could have had, or risks you could have leapt at that you don't have the chance to do. And so everyone, I mean, as I sort of hinted at before, everyone in their 60s, or just everyone who's gone through a lot of life, has some sense that there are paths behind them that would have been different. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the paths that they didn't take would have been better. They just would have been different. The experiences you get when being a parent are amazing, but that doesn't mean that they are the kinds of experiences that make your life by definition more complete than the experiences you have if you don't have kids.
I agree with that. And of course I have regrets already and I will continue to have more as I get older, or think I've, you know, made some poor decisions or wish things had been different. But I actually think that although I'm sure there are some people who regret having kids, I do think that it must be a more common thing to grow old and regret not having them than to regret having them. Like, I don't think that a lot of people look at their grown children and think, man, I wish I didn't have you.
No, because there's actual physical human beings you're referring to.
Yeah, but
to wish them out of existence.
But you could actually think back and wish that you had them.
Sure. So we have actually discussed this in one of our first episodes, which was about parenting ambivalence, and was actually one of the first episodes we did that just got a very, very strong reaction from listeners, both child-free listeners and listeners with children. We're going to post the link to that episode on our Facebook page for people who want to go back to it. Allison and I also disagreed on that episode.
And we had a guest, Megan Daum, who had just written about this in a really compelling piece.
Yeah, and who ended up editing an anthology of writing by child-free writers about that decision, which is really interesting, which I recommend. We'll put up a link to that, too, on the Facebook page. And Allison and I disagreed in that conversation, too. Like, we definitely come down on I would say, slightly different sides on this, though. I think that Allison really does, like, truly respect people who make this decision. It seems like you definitely feel, as you said, like there would be a hole in your life if you had ended up not having kids, and it would.
Yeah, that's exactly. I don't feel like anyone is like a lesser person for choosing not to have kids. I don't think that's like some sort of sentence to unhappiness or a, you know, a less full and rich life. But I do feel like, you know, I wish it didn't have to be some, like, it's hard to talk about without it sounding like some kind of culture war. And that's not how I want to frame it at all. But yeah, I feel like personally, my life would not be as beautiful as it is. And it's often horrendous.
Yeah, yeah. Like when your kid pees on the bus stop lawn. And my take on that remains exactly the same as it was several years ago when we had this conversation, which is if you have doubts about whether you should have a kid, don't have the kid. The world has enough kids. But B, you sound like you really
everybody
love your
has doubts about whether they should have kids. If everybody who had doubts didn't have kids, no one would have kids.
Nope, that's not true. People still have lots of kids. It really happens just literally all the time.
Yeah, because they overcome their doubts.
No, sometimes it's just because they don't use birth control. Okay, so B, it sounds like you are being very thoughtful about this. It is a very hard decision. I agree with you. I think that the situation that you are in, though tough from a decision-making standpoint, has set you up to probably be very happy whichever thing you choose. So in the end, remember that. If you choose to have kids, you and your husband will love them. You will make a great mom. You'll have the greatest time. And your husband, though a little creaky when he picks them up at age 1,000 or whatever, he will also have a great time. If you choose not to have kids, you will have so much money to spend. You'll be able to do so many amazing things. And you can babysit ours, or you can babysit the grandchildren that your husband may soon have if he has grown kids. Like, those are kids that might be in your life sometime soon. But I do think, listening to your call, that you have set yourself up not between choosing two things and worrying about the thing that you're missing, but in the end, choosing between two things and ending up with a life that will make you really happy. So try and rest easy on that front, at least. All right. Thank you, listeners, for all your amazing calls. We're sorry if we didn't get to yours. We do, of course, do calls every episode. And so we may get to some of those later. Or if you heard this and you're like, God, I wish they were answering my call, I have a question. You can call us at 424-255-7833. That number is 424-255-RUDE. Call us and ask us a question, and we will try and answer it on a future episode. And thank you again to everyone who called us and left us a message.
And listeners, please go to our Facebook page or email us and tell us, you know, if you thought our answers were really off base. We want to hear.
Or if you thought we're just as right as we always are, tell us that too. All right, let's move on to recommendations. Allison, what do you got?
Okay, I want to recommend book clubs for kids. I don't mean the subscription services, though we do subscribe to one of those called PJ Library. Have you heard of this?
I have not.
I mean, you wouldn't, but it sends age-appropriate Jewish-themed books once a month, and it's great. I mean, your kids could stand to learn a little bit about Judaism, but
that's true.
I'm not surprised you don't subscribe. But I just mean regular old book club, like grown-ups have, but for kids. So a friend of Sam's mom decided to start one for her son and four of his buddies, including Sam, to keep them excited about books over the summer. They're all entering kindergarten this year, and none of them can actually read at all or much, as far as I know. But they get together on a weeknight, and they read, the parent reads a book, and they discuss it for I don't know how long before everything kind of unravels and they start playing with swords and eating pizza. But we've only done it twice. We haven't hosted it yet, so I actually haven't seen it in action. But I know Sam's had a lot of fun, and the parents seem like pretty excited about when I pick up, like, about the question and answer and conversation part of things. And I just love the idea. So it's fun. Do it at night, I'd say, during the week. So it's like something a little special. Your kids get to stay out late and be with their friends.
Yeah, that's a great recommendation. Harper is in a book club with a bunch of girls from her old school and her new school. And they get together every 2 months, and one of the girls chooses a book, and then everyone reads it. We go to her house and discuss it. And it is like the most charming thing you've ever seen. These little girls asking each other questions about the book in a slightly overly formal, but still very heartfelt way. That's great. Okay, I have a recommendation for a children's movie, not Disney, but one of the many, many amazing competitors on the kids' movie landscape right now. The movie is called Kubo and the Two Strings. It is a stop-motion animated movie from Laika, which is the company behind Coraline and Paranorman. It's a great movie for kids maybe 8 and up. It is an adventure, a sort of boy-style adventure with lots of sword fighting and quips and witticisms, but it is very shaped. The story comes from, or is shaped by Japanese folklore, and the aesthetic of the movie is Japanese. It seems to be set in basically medieval or feudal Japan. It's really exciting. It is very sincere and does not feel very Shrek-y, to use a word that I use when describing it on the Culture Gab Fest. It's not, you know, it doesn't have characters looking at the camera and making jokes about like Donald Trump. It's a real valiant attempt to make like a real medieval Japanese folklore story. And it's really, really beautiful. It's like one of the most beautiful children's movies I've ever seen. You should see it in 3D. Usually 3D sucks, but in this case, 3D is great. And you should throw some money at this movie because it's not doing great at the box office and it needs all the help it can get. So it's Kubo and the Two Strings. Go take your kids to it and you will probably really like it too.
My kids saw this when they were away with their cousins in between the Flo Rida and Betty Wop, and they really liked it. They said they loved it, but it wasn't really about anything, or they couldn't like really tell me what it was about, but they did love it.
Yeah, that seems like about the right response from kids your age. Like, it's about like actually pretty serious and adult questions of identity and the past and memory. So I'm not surprised that they felt that way. But luckily, it has lots of great sword fighting and stuff to keep them occupied. All right. So that is our show. Please, once again, like our Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/momanddadarefighting. And also give us a call and ask us some more questions. 424-255-RUDE. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is part of the Panoply Network. You can see all our shows at itunes.com/panoply. Thank you to Panoply Grand Poobah Andy Bowers and to Slate Podcast Executive Producer Steve Lichtai. Thanks to our guest, Ben Mathis-Lilly, our Slate Plus guest. And thanks to everyone, every single one of you who called in with a question. We're really, really grateful that you did. Thank you to our producer, Afim Shapiro. Thank you, Allison.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for listening.